Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Steve Jones Show, the Derby Day edition of the Steve Jones Show. Dick Girardi on in a few minutes talking about the Kentucky Derby. Lots of other topics to talk about, too. Yankees fans concerned about Mariano Rivera. Will he be back at all after the injury? And a lot of people wondering, what in the world was he doing taking outfield fly balls? Seems as though that's not unusual. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on as well. Again, Derby Day, talking about the Kentucky Derby. Right now, the odds-on favorite moves around a lot. Union Rags was one of them on the odds-on favorite list. And also, Bodemeister was another one that was on the top picks so far. But they've moved around a lot. Matter of fact, Union Rags started off at 9-2, now coming in at 6-1. So Union Rags, the favorite at the moment, followed by Bodemeister, which was 4-1 this morning, now 7-1, losing a little bit of ground to Gemologist, which actually, I'm a big fan of that particular horse, winner of the Woods Memorial just a few ago, and won five straight starts, too, if memory serves right. So that might be a nice outside pick, Gemologist, at 7-1 right now. The long shot on the board at this particular moment has to be Liaison, going at 59-1. You talked about it before. I'm a big fan of Bob Baffert and everything he does as a trainer, usually very successful with his horses. That's one that may be looking at the a very long, long road trying to get into the winner's circle there on that one. Bob Baffert, also the trainer for Bodemeister, too. Again, that horse coming at 7-1. We'll talk more about the Kentucky Derby and the Oaks, which I think gets no respect at all because the Kentucky Derby is the one that's always the big one. The Oaks runs a little bit before the Derby, and that's the one that nobody seems to talk about. But there's a lot of money that gets dropped on the Oaks in Churchill Downs and some of the off-track betting parlors and so forth around the country. But you never used to see that on television because the big race, obviously, was the Kentucky Derby. And we'll also get a weather report from Churchill Downs, too, in Louisville to find out exactly what weather is in store for the horses for this coming 20-horse race. And Steve was right. He talked about it earlier this week. 20 horses in this race is absolutely unbelievable that you're able to get that many horses on the track, and it just becomes a humongous traffic jam, especially if you're out in one of those extended gates, or not one of, but the extended gate that they have at Churchill Downs for this big 20-horse race tomorrow. Again, that's all on top, along with a heck of a lot more, including more talk about the Saints and some of the Saints players, well, more specifically the NFLPA, now taking the side of the players and trying to negotiate maybe less of a fine and less of a suspension, if any at all. We'll have more on that coming up. It's the Steve Jones Show here on WKOK.
When you buy anything, isn't it best to see people who've been around for a long time, satisfying customers just like you all the time? Makes sense, doesn't it? So when you're in the market for a quality new or pre-owned vehicle, the only place to go is Sunbury Motors. They've been in business since 1915, partnering up folks just like you with a vehicle that best suits their needs and budget. Their service after the sale can't be beat. And if you like selection, there's none better than Sunbury Motors. Fords, Kias, Lincolns, Mercurys, Hyundais, Sunbury Motors sells them all. Their finance teams are unmatched. They'll be glad to help you secure the affordable option you want on any new or pre-owned vehicle you find on their lots. See the people who've been in business since 1915. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln Mercury, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
It's
Steve, put your lighter away.
Song was written about Glue Factory. Finished last in the 1962 Kentucky Derby.
What was your suggestion if the horse is named Glue Factory?
Glue Factory or Alpo's Choice?
Yeah, Alpo's Choice was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Avoid it.
I mean, I'm not an expert, but that's what I would suggest. We'll have Dick Girardi on from Churchill Downs in Louisville after the bottom of the hour.
Do you have all your Kentucky Derby posters up in the Sunbury Motors studio this morning?
Here at the Sunbury Motors studio, the AKA the Chateau. Sunbury Motors, by the way, 4th Street in Sunbury. And also at Routes 11 and 15, Hummelsworth, Sunbury Motors, Kia. No, we do not.
We
have the Chateau, by the way, nicely decorated. It actually is. You'd like it.
I've seen photos.
No. Yeah. No, the photos are incorrect.
Oh, really?
No, we made dramatic changes.
Wow.
No. We made dramatic changes. A lot of things that had been there before are now gone.
Gone.
So, yeah.
Well, it's been an interesting 24 hours if you're a Yankee fan, hasn't it?
Well, Mariano Rivera, probably the greatest closer in the history of the game. I realize that Brad Lidge and Mariano Rivera are often mentioned in the same sentence.
Probably not.
No. But the Phillies start a huge series tonight. And, yeah, it's May, but it's huge. I mean, you want to start establishing you are. And they start a big series tonight with Washington at Nationals Park. Kyle Kendrick against Steven Strasburg tonight. And that is going to be one heck of a series to watch, I think. And I think everyone's interested to watch Bryce Harper, and I think everybody's interested to watch Strasburg pitch tonight. And Strasburg's off to a great start. ERA's in the ones. He's 2-0. Kendrick trying to follow up what was a fabulous start by Blanton yesterday. Joe couldn't have been any better. 88 pitches, 67 of them in strikes. Gave up just 3 hits, struck out 6, didn't walk a batter, and completely saved the bullpen. Now Kyle Kendrick follows that up. At least they have the bullpen fresh enough to move forward. It's a 3-game weekend set down there, and we are looking forward to that series very, very much. Meanwhile, Mariano Rivera shagging fly balls. Hey, this is what gets me about this. Every time something happens, let's take Derrick Rose with the Bulls. Why is he out there? Well, he's a basketball player. They're trying to win. It's the NBA. You can make up 11 points in a minute and 30 seconds. So you're trying to put the game away with your best player out there. Okay, tears his ACL. I've had people ask me, why is he out there shagging fly balls? Well, he has for 18 years.
Well, I know. He's done it all the time, and it was a regular part of his routine, but...
It's a regular part of all their routines. They all shag fly balls.
I don't know if I want my star closer. You're never going to grab a fly ball.
Are you going to put him in a box?
Well, he doesn't take batting practice.
Oh, yes, he does.
What, about once every 6 months?
Every time they play a National League team, he takes batting practice.
Once every 3 months, then.
They play, how many interleague games do they play? They all take batting practice.
But he's never, ever, ever going to catch a fly ball. Never. Maybe a pop-up.
You have to keep yourself in some sort of shape and conditioning. This is part of it. You're running. You're tracking. You know, they're going to drop a bunt off the mound. They drop a bunt. He goes down. He fields it. Slips. And guess what?
But that would be okay with me. If he were taking infield practice, I'd be all right with that.
Put him in a box. He could get this thing walking off a curb.
True. That is very true.
Oh, God. You know, after a while. Everybody thinks too much. I mean, look.
I've never been accused of that.
It happens. Stuff happens. Right? Stuff happens. This happened. He's tracking fly balls. What do you want him to do? Sit there. Don't move. Something may happen. He could slip in the runway. He could slip on the dugout stairs.
Suggs has the injury reportedly playing basketball, all right, in the off season. If that was during the season, then I probably would have had a problem with that myself if he were playing basketball during the season. But it's the off season; it's his unwinding time. But this was, like I said, if he were doing infield practice, I could understand that. And I agree with you, it can happen at any time for any reason just by walking down the street. I get that. But why have a guy do something that he doesn't really need to do and risk it?
He's shagging fly balls. Nobody gets hurt shagging fly balls.
That's what they thought 24 hours ago.
He did it for 18 years. He never got hurt.
Agreed.
Most common injury for a guy like him is called his arm. Yeah, that's after a while, because of the 24-hour cycle, we analyze things too much. We put too much thought into it. He went back. He shagged a fly ball. Okay? And landed awkwardly. He's out. Okay. Tom Hovas one time missed 3 weeks because he cut his finger with a steak knife at dinner at Rhode Island. What are you supposed to do? Tell him not to eat? Feed him yourself?
Make him puree everything?
I've seen everything. Okay? Anthony Morelli one time dislocated the thumb in his non-throwing hand on the final play of Thursday practice handing a ball off because when he handed the ball off, the running back grabbed the ball in the thumb and he yanked his thumb out. Nobody gets hurt on Thursday. You're saying, well, what would he be doing out there? Because you have to do things. It wasn't like he was clowning around out there. He was taking it seriously. He just landed awkwardly. Could have landed awkwardly covering first base.
But could you say what he was doing was more risky than and more susceptible to an injury of any type than not doing the normal, than not doing what a normal pitcher would do, and that wouldn't be shagging flies, in my opinion.
Most pitchers do shag fly balls.
But why? They're never going to be in the outfield. That's all I'm saying. If they want to take pop-ups in infield, I'm okay with that. But not in the outfield. You're not going to get it. You're not going to be in the outfield. Why bother?
It's baseball. Just let them shag flies. It's good. It's good cardiovascular. It gets you running. It gets you moving. You know, it loosens you up. I mean, it does all those things.
But you're not going to have your safety play quarterback, so why have him practice it?
Sometimes safeties do play quarterback in practice. Sometimes, based on numbers, if you have a drill that's offense against offense and defense against defense, we're just working on defenses, your safeties are going to play quarterback.
Okay, your guard is never going to play quarterback. Why have him throw the ball in practice?
I'm just saying, though.
More goes
into these things than people realize. Okay? You can't put people in boxes. He's the only pitcher I've ever heard of that hurt himself, tore his ACL, shagging a fly ball.
Would there be as much discussion about it if it wasn't an ACL or a season-ending injury? What if it was a six-week injury?
There would not be as much discussion of it if it was not Mariano Rivera.
All right, I'll give you that.
Okay, if it's the closer for the Nationals, nobody's talking about it. They're like, oh, you hear that? Boy, I guess I'm going to have to get another one of those. Instead of the premier closer of his generation, if not the premier closer of all time. I mean, would Philly fans be up in arms at Brad Lidge 2 years ago, shagging fly balls towards ACL?
I would have been, yes. Absolutely would have been.
Why? Because he had an ERA over 7 2 years ago.
I don't care. He's the closer. He's not the center fielder. That's my problem with it. I get what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying. But that doesn't mean he should still be out there doing it. Why risk it?
So should they put a bodyguard with him the entire time so he doesn't do anything that's possibly risky, like stepping into traffic?
Well, all right, which is going to be more risky? Stepping into traffic or running around in a place where you're not used to running around?
Well, you're jogging after fly balls, which you've done for 18 years, which you are used to doing, which you are used to the traffic of it.
I know you're looking at the 18-year part of it. But still, I wouldn't have had him do it for year one. Not even in year one would he have done it if it were me.
I would have let him shag fly balls, for goodness sakes. You're shagging fly balls. You're not calling somebody else off. You're not running at full steam toward the wall. You're not crashing into it. You're shagging fly balls.
When they first talked about the injury, I thought the way he was running, you know, awkwardly around left and right, I thought that he did hit the wall and that's what caused it. But then I saw the video and then it was different.
He just landed on it wrong. Hey, look, you can't put everybody in a box. You have to let them have some outlet. He wasn't doing anything dangerous. Okay? He wasn't doing anything dangerous. He wasn't getting on a motorcycle and leaping over 18 buses at Caesar's Palace. He was shagging fly balls. It happens. Stuff happens.
Who's next in line now for the Yankees then?
They'll blow eight. Probably Robertson. I would guess Robertson, but the number of saves that they'll blow in the season will probably go to three to up to maybe eight or nine. That could swing the race.
Oh, that's what I was just going to ask you next. How many positions in the AL East does this cost the Yankees?
No, it'll cost them a few games because, look at Boston so far. Why is Boston in last place?
They're not scoring enough runs.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Actually, Boston has been fine offensively.
All right. Why?
And their starting pitching hasn't been that bad.
Yeah, I was being smart with that answer. Go ahead. Yeah.
But the reason Boston is not probably in first place right now is because they have not closed games. That's the reason why. Boston's bullpen ERA and their closing percentage on saves is not very good right now.
What is the, I don't know, I would say percentage would be the right word, but what are the chances of Rivera being able, at his age, to be able to come back for at least one more year, even though he said this was probably going to be his last year?
He's 42. You're talking about, this is usually a nine-month rehab. And I would not have much confidence that he would be able to close to come back for one more year. I would think that this is it. I would think this is it so far. In the major leagues, the Red Sox right now are fourth in runs scored. They are third in the major leagues in batting average. They're eighth in on-base percentage. They're second in slugging percentage. Okay? That's their offense. Like, the Phillies are like 24 behind them. I mean, that's the problem. Okay? Offensively, they have no issues. Team ERA, 29th. Quality starts, not bad. They're in the middle of the 11. Their problem is they can't close games. Cannot close games. And that's the issue that they're going to have. That's the issue the Yankees are going to have now. Who closes games for them? Rivera's had nine games already this year. Five saves, 2.16 ERA. Not bad. Not bad at all. And he's 5 for 5 in save opportunities. Now, is he infallible? No, because obviously, he gave up the game-winning hit in the 2001 World Series to Luis Gonzalez, albeit a flare. The Red Sox beat him when he had the World Series on the line. When he walked Kevin Millar, Dave Roberts stole second, and Bill Miller singled up the middle. In fact, he's blown more saves against Boston than anybody else. So not infallible, but still.
He was pretty solid against the Phillies in that series.
Of course he was. Yeah, the World Series, that year. But the Red Sox are 6 for 11, by the way, in save opportunities. Not good. Because their closer is now pitching for the Phillies. And the guy that they got to be their closer is on the disabled list. They haven't had their closer all year.
And by the way, that closer is doing quite well.
Yeah, he's doing tremendous. I mean, Papelbon has been everything Philadelphia could ask for. The problem is they have to get to him. Once they get to him, they feel great. They get to him three times in this Washington series, they'll sweep them.
I told you, the bridge is awfully rickety.
Well, the bridge is awfully rickety for most people. And see, that's the other part, too, is by moving Robertson down to be the closer, that changes the Yankees' bridge. That's one less guy that they have that they feel pretty good about that could be their bridge guy to get to the save spot. This guy is is arguably the greatest closer of all time.
I bet no more of the relief pitchers are going to go out for outfield drills.
Oh, you can't put people in a box. I mean, I've seen guys get hurt in warm-ups in football. I've seen guys get hurt in warm-ups in basketball. You don't have them that night. What are you supposed to do, not warm up? You know, I mean, you can't put people in a box. I mean, accidents happen. Look at this show. All right.
You can't put people in a box, but you can put horses in a cage to start the race. Sorry, that was
next,
the best tie-in.
Next, we'll talk about the Kentucky Derby with Dick Girardi, whom we kept in a box just to make sure he could do this interview because we did not want him to get laryngitis. Sarah Bartlett's next.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Joined now by my broadcast partner for Penn State basketball and without question one of the top horse racing experts in the country, Dick Girardi, Philadelphia Daily News. I have to start with the video piece. And I watched it a second time this morning about the Wyeth family, Union Rags. This is one of those stories that makes horse racing great, at least in my opinion. How far off am I on that?
Yeah, you're right, Steve. It's a story that I first wrote about in August of last year and then wrote an extensive piece in October, the week before the Breeders' Cup. And yeah, it is a great story. Phyllis Wyeth, who worked for President Kennedy 50 years ago, was injured in a car accident, crippled, in braces and crutches, and now is on a motorized scooter. Her husband, Jamie Wyeth, famous artist, lived in southwest of Philadelphia in a horse country, and they had this horse, and she sold the horse. She had a dream, said, I got to buy this horse back. She buys the horse back. The horse is Union Rags. He's one of the favorites for the Kentucky Derby tomorrow, and the video piece is sort of based on the story that I wrote for the paper, and they just did a wonderful job with it. And you can get it, I think it's trackpackpa.com. You can get it on there and just watch it right on the web. It's like, I'm going to say like a 22, 23 minute video, and it's really well done.
Yeah, it's extremely well done, but the story is remarkable because she had the horse at one point, and the second she didn't have it, she wanted that horse back. Not because she thought it could win the Kentucky Derby, but because she loved the horse.
Right, and it's a horse that its bloodlines go back in her family for 40 years. Her parents were big horse racing people, Hickory Tree Farm. They actually owned Devil's Bag, who would have been the big favorite for the Kentucky Derby in 1984, but got hurt, didn't make the race. And it's sort of like it was going to be the last foal out of the, Mare Tempo, who traces all the way back, as I said, 4 years in the family, and she just felt like she couldn't let the horse go, so she sold him for $145,000, bought him back for $390,000. Not generally a good way to make money, but now, of course, the horse is worth some multiples of millions, and it was a pretty good dream to have.
Let's talk about also something that is an underlying story that a lot of people may not realize when it comes to the Triple Crown races. There is so much emphasis put on, obviously, Kentucky bred horses, so much emphasis put on the fact that the Saudis are getting involved with money. Then there's southeastern Pennsylvania in the last 8 years. Smarty Jones, a Fleet Alex, Barbaro, and now this horse. It's a story nobody is talking about unless you know the game and understand the game, what has it been about that area and the quiet interest in breeding quality horses?
Yeah, it's kind of a miracle, Steve, in many ways. I mean, look, Pennsylvania, you can go back years, it certainly has bred a number of quality horses through the years, but nothing like this run. I mean, this is the Smarty Jones was just this little Pennsylvania bred that they hoped maybe could win some races at Philadelphia Park. The Chapmans who owned him were basically getting out of the sport. Roy Chapman was dying of emphysema. They were down to two horses. Their trainer ends up getting killed by his stepson. They give him to another semi-unknown trainer, John Service, and the horse almost went the Triple Crown. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. The next year, a group of guys, a couple of them went to Catholic school in Northeast Philly, put it together, 75,000. A group of guys and one woman put up 75,000 to buy with their first horse. Turns out to be a Fleet Alex. He went to Preakness and the Thelma. And then, of course, Barbaro, the following year, is bred by the Jacksons, who live maybe about 15 minutes from where the wives live down in Chester County. He wins the Derby, and, of course, the sad outcome of the Preakness. But yeah, to have three, and then you figure, well, that's it, and then here we get the fourth one, Union Rags. We'll see how he can do, but he has not accomplished what those other horses accomplished, but he hasn't obviously had the chance yet. He's going to get his shot tomorrow.
It's just interesting that he is in the favorite pool, just like those three horses were in the favorite pool, by the way, going into their respective races.
Oh yeah, no question. Smarty Jones was the favorite. A Fleet Alex was the second choice. Barbaro was the second choice, and Union Rags is either going to be the favorite or the second choice, right? So they're coming down here. They're not coming down here as unknowns. I mean, they're known quantities for sure.
And it turns out that Smarty Jones, now, of course, out to stud, Offspring, a couple of them right are in Center County and Howard right now, Offspring of Smarty Jones. So the
absolutely.
The connections continue.
Now, and he's actually standing stud now in Pennsylvania. I think he's in Lancaster County, Steve. He's not all that far from where he was born, which is in Chester County.
Exactly. And Michael Matz ends up being the trainer as well, who also trained Barbaro. And if I recall correctly, Union Rags ends up with Barbaro's stall.
That is correct. He's got the exact stall Barbaro was in at the Derby, Barn 42 stall. I think it's 10 or 16. I mean, I know it when I see it. But, yeah, I think Michael asked for it, and they gave it to him. That was very lucky for him 6 years ago, and he's hoping some of that karma rubs off. Now, Barbaro came to this race undefeated, whereas Union Rags has lost twice, but lost twice with rational excuses why he lost. Not like he ran poorly, just stuff happened and he got beat. But, yeah, they both very, very good records coming into the race. Both had raced six times. As I said, Barbaro had not lost, and Union Rags is a third and a second.
There are certain trainers who bring with them star quality. Bob Baffert, Zito, over the years, the names that will flow that are, quote, the name trainers. Michael Matz may not be the name trainer, but he is a quality trainer. What makes him special in this game?
Yeah, I think he's got a real affinity for horses, Steve, which comes from his days as a champion show jumper. He carried the American flag to the closing ceremonies of the 96 Olympics. He was a gold medalist in team show jumping, and he was born up in the Lehigh Valley, and so he's been around horses his whole life. And after he retired as a show jumper, he got into training thoroughbreds, and he, little by little, he's built up his business. And he has proved when he gets a really good horse, he knows what to do with him. He proved it with Barbaro, and he's proven it again with Union Rags.
And the mount as well is interesting. The mount that they wanted when he was a 2-year-old, they couldn't get, and then lucked out when they got him when he became a 3-year-old.
Yeah, they really wanted Julian Leperu to ride him in his first start up at Saratoga last summer. He wasn't available. He was committed to ride another horse who ended up getting hurt, didn't even make the race. So Javier Castellano rode him through his 2-year-old season. Then right before Union Rags was ready to make his 3-year-old debut in late February, Castellano chose another horse who ended up getting hurt and went to Julian Leperu, who they wanted all the time. And did not distinguish himself in the Florida Derby. Hopefully, I'm sure he'll ride better tomorrow. He's the leading rider here at Churchill Downs, so I suspect he'll have figured out what went wrong. And interestingly, Castellano's in the race, too. He's on Gemologist, who's undefeated in 5 starts. And Castellano's actually having a great year, as is Leperu.
Gemologist, in fact, is, I believe, only the 8th horse in recent memory to be undefeated, but not the favorite for the Kentucky Derby. As you mentioned, 5 for 5. What makes Gemologist an interesting horse?
Yeah, he's trained by Todd Fletcher, who's the top guy in the game. He wins more than anybody. The only race he has trouble winning is this one. He's 1-for-29 in the Derby, and I think the way he trains, Steve, is such that his horses always take a lot of time between races, and he kind of babies them, but they're ready for a gigantic effort. The Derby really isn't a race you can baby a horse for. It's a tough race with 20 horses. You got to be toughened up. That's the issue with Gemologist. He is undefeated. He would be like the mid-major coming into the tournament that had a great season, but you're not quite sure how they're going to match up with the big boys. That's where he is. He may very well be good enough. That we'll find out tomorrow. He's got a good post. 15's a good draw for him and his running style. And he's certainly a contender, there's no doubt.
Butler. This is Butler.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah. So at this point, I mean, well, the difference is he's coming. He's got one of the named coaches or slash trainers, and right. He's certainly got a big-time owner. But, yeah, he just hasn't been in the big races against the big horses. He wasn't ready to run in the Breeders' Cup. But he has run twice at Churchill Downs, obviously won both of them, both of them going a mile of 16. So the horse is already familiar with the course. He's legit. Now, there's probably six or seven horses. If they win, you go, okay. Right. Yeah, we just hope that we don't get a mind that bird or something stupid where you just go, you know, how did that happen?
how did 50-1 mind that bird one, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was like everybody's looking around like, who is that horse? Including Tom Durkin, who was calling the race. He wanted to say mind that bird, but he couldn't believe what he was seeing, and he hesitated for a minute. He said, that can't be right.
And who are these other horses behind him? Bodemeister is currently the favorite. Things, of course, can change over the next 24 to 36 hours. This is the Baffert horse, and Baffert wins big races. You mentioned once in a while, maybe Gemologist being babied into this. Bodemeister is not.
No, Baffert doesn't baby horses. He did, which is why he's been able to win the Derby three times. He trains him hard, and he expects him to run good. And Bodemeister did not start as a two-year-old, and the stat that everybody, of course, is throwing around this week, no horse that didn't start as a two-year-old has won the race since the Revolutionary War or something. I mean, it goes back into the 1800s, and it's crazy. But the whole game's changed, and this is a very talented horse in the hands of a trainer who absolutely knows how to win the race. So he's for sure a dangerous horse tomorrow.
Anybody else that you look at? You said it'd be logical if there any one of six different horses yep. won. What other horses fall into the realm of logic?
Yeah, Creative Cause is logical. Never run poorly, never been forced to third in any of his races. Now, he had a little bit of an issue with a foot. His training maybe hasn't gone quite as well as they might have hoped. Daddy Knows Best is a good long shot. He'll be number 10. He's 15-1. He's coming off his career best race, trained by Steve Asmussen, who's one of the top guys in the game, who's won every race but the Derby. He had the Horse of the Year three times in a row. He had Carlin twice and then Rachel Alexander. So he's going to win the Derby. He was second last year. It's just a question of what year it's going to be. Those would be among the other ones. But, yeah, it's a good group because they're very consistent. It's not like they're up and down. Almost all the top horses run well every time they're let out for the starting gate.
It's also, in American horse racing, you're allowed to have 14 to start, except for this one, as you mentioned in the previous answer, 20, which makes it horse racing's cluster bomb. Can you lose this race in the first 150 yards?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, looking at Lucky did 2 years ago. He came back to win the Preakness. He was by far the best group. Forcing the crop, but he had the one post and he got banged into the rail like three times. And yeah, you can, because if the, I call it the waterfall or the cascade, right? If all these horses start coming inward toward the rail and you get squeezed, yeah, you could absolutely lose the race in the first 100 yards. And that's the problem with horse racing. It's like a sporting event. Look, if you had a bad first 5 minutes of football or basketball, the recovery time is there. It's not horse racing. It's just you just don't have enough time to get back in. It only lasts 2 minutes.
Give us an idea of the skill of a jockey, Dick. And each one of these horses has a mount that's outstanding. But the skill, because this is as dangerous a sport as it gets.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing to keep in mind. You're talking about a 110-pound person on the back of a 1,000-pound animal in a pack of 20,000-pound animals going 35 miles an hour. So just envision what that might be like. So, yeah, to be able to steer them accurately, get beyond the fear, the potential of a pileup of some sort where you all of a sudden, with no notice at all, you end up on the ground. Yeah, it is, you have to be fearless. You have to have great reflexes. If you don't think they're athletes, just come out and check them out sometime, because they definitely are. It's a dangerous profession. It can be a very rewarding one, but you better be brave if you're going to go out there and get on one of these animals.
Something that you look at when you're trying to judge potential distance of a horse is how that horse runs the next 100 yards after the finish line. When you have watched some of these horses after the finish line, which ones give you the impression that a mile and a quarter is something that fits into their wheelhouse?
Yeah, I mean, Union Rags is the one that jumps off the page, because I kept watching after the Breeders' Cup when he lost by a neck to Hanson. 100 yards past the finish line, he was 5 lengths in front. Same thing in the Florida Derby when he ran third. And obviously, he'll get 330 yards more than the Breeders' Cup and 220 yards more than the Florida Derby to make up that ground. So, yeah, he looks like a horse that the mile and a quarter should not be an issue just by the way he finishes. But it's funny. It's one of those things, because this is the distance that most of these horses will never run again. You don't know for sure. And generally speaking, this race is decided by the eighth pole anyway. So it's the horse who can get the fastest from mile and eighth. They're all getting tired at the end. That's the way horses run. People probably don't realize this, but they all run slower at the finish than at the start. It looks like sometimes like that's not the case, but that is the case. So it's really the horse that makes the big move to get the lead. Generally, the Derby's decided with a couple hundred yards to go.
What's this week like for you? And I mean, I'm asking you some questions I already know the answer to.
Yeah.
Because you and I have kind of lived through this the last 9 years. But for the audience out there that may not know, what's this week like for you?
A lot of it's preparation before I get here. Like I did a story on Jamie Wyatt, the artist, which I actually went out to their farm last week and did it and ran in Tuesday's paper. I got down there Tuesday afternoon, a couple of early mornings, Wednesday and Thursday, to go out, talk to people, see the horses, listen to different people, get a sense of what's going on. The first day, I actually watched the horses from the backstretch. And yesterday, I went up to the press box to watch when the Derby horses came out. They actually give them a 15-minute window from 8:30 to 8:45, where they have the track of themselves without all the other horses around. So, and you just try to listen and observe. And I've written a story on Bob Baffert, couple more on Union Rags, a prediction column, a horse-by-horse thing, and I'm actually done now. I'm finished until the race. It's fascinating because there are just all these great stories, and in particular, there happens to be one that's local for us.
You mentioned Jamie Wyeth, the artist. How into this has he become through Phil?
Very. Yeah, I think he wants it for his wife, obviously, because it's something that means so much to her. And I think he's just, he spends almost all his time in his studio. That's what he does. He says, look, I have no hobbies. This is what I do. But I think he's become just entranced by this whole thing, because the horse used to be like in the barn right underneath his studio after Union Rags was born, and for the first year of his life before he went to, before he got sold and then eventually went back to the racetrack. So, yeah, I think there's a real connection. And I don't think he was an everyday horse guy, but he's been here all week. He came down on Tuesday. He's not missing anything either.
Mint juleps are green. You won't touch them, but enjoy the Derby anyway.
Thank you, Steve.
Dick Girardi, my broadcast partner in Penn State basketball for the last 9 years, and an Eclipse Award winner. One of the top horse racing writers in the country, from Churchill Downs in Louisville. Kevin's been taking notes, trying to get himself ready for the races.
I got my Exacta ready.
America awaits that in a few moments on WKOK. My old Kentucky home. There's nothing like the Indianapolis 500 when they play back home again in Indiana. And Jim Nabors goes from surprise, surprise, to back home again. What the heck is going on? What the heck is that transition?
Reminds me of Stroker Ace when Burt Reynolds was picking on him because his mouth never gets underneath his nose when he sings.
Let's see now. The Kevin Herr not junk mail junk mail today.
Yeah, I even put on a not junk mail for you.
Kentucky Derby, Kentucky Oaks. I think we covered that, don't you think?
Well, half of it anyway. But that's okay.
I didn't ask about the Oaks. Let's see. Steven Bench, will he be up for quarterback job in 2012?
Well, will he be in the rotation or will they consider redshirting?
Well, if he comes in here and sets the world on fire. But he doesn't know the system yet, so.
True.
Haven't seen him practice one time, although he was at one spring practice because I saw him. Rivera's injury. Who do the Yankees go to next? Whitey Ford's out. Rivera often caught fly balls to keep loose. Is that a good idea? Kevin's already whined, moaned, and complained about that.
And you've disagreed.
NFLPA. What, you want bodyguards around him?
Sure.
Carry him to the mound? I mean, he could step on a drain and tear it. Former Philly Bobby Abreu goes to L.A. in the National League.
I thought that was unusual.
He can still play outfield. It's Tomy thing hasn't worked.
Well, here's the thing. With Tomy's injuries now, and of course now with Rivera, both of them in that age range, are both their careers over?
Possibly, yes. And is Tiger missing the cut on the PGA Tour a big story? Sure. He's the biggest name of the tour.
But if Phil Mickelson didn't make the cut, would we hear about it?
It would be mentioned.
Right.
But it would not. You have to remember what the ESPN philosophy is.
Yeah, that's what the philosophy is.
Well, no, and I'm being serious now because I know enough people who work there. All right. LeBron James, they go with certain names. LeBron James. Tiger Woods. It was Brett Favre at one point. Okay, now it's the Tebow thing. But they just target whatever they can around those names, Kobe Bryant, around those names all the time, all the time, all the time. And so no matter what, there are so many times I'll watch them do golf highlights where they'll show you 5-6 Tiger highlights. And he's 8 shots off the pace. Oh, and they show you one putt by Jason Duffner. He's in the lead. It's irresponsible, but they think it draws viewers. And maybe it does. If this were TV, Sarah Bartlett would be our draw. She's next.